Now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, oh. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, 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 oh. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh. And all living creatures say, take good care of us. Please do not hurt us. Hey, 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 oh. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh. Ourselves, to be with one another, to be with our surroundings, to be. And we are here to take care of ourselves, to take care of one another, to take care of our surroundings.
Greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitishi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawantakwasin, to all of our relations.
First sound that we hear even from our mother's womb. Each drum has a spirit. And each singer awakens these spirits to come out for the dancers and the people. The songs are not written down, but are remembered by our singers to help our people to remember our ancestors and our traditional ways, which we will pass down to our children. There are many types of songs. There are songs of happiness. There are songs of thanks, songs of honor, and even songs of sadness. With the beating of the drum, every person is affected in a different way. The drum brings these emotions and the dancers into our sacred circle. We shall follow our brothers. Biyate uchea kabinikbite.
Beautiful song entitled "Shall We Follow Our Brothers," in honor of all of our relations that have walked before us on sacred Mother Earth. This flute song was by Kiowa Apache musician Andrew Vasquez from his CD entitled "An American Indian," available from McElshay Music. Ashkwe, greetings and hello everyone to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices here on Radio for Peace International. RFPI is Global Community Radio. In today's edition of Wolf Mountain Radio, we present a conversation with Jim Kenney, International Director, Council for Parliament of the World's Religions. The Council for Parliament of the World's Religions, known as CPWR, is a wonderful organization whose mission is to foster interreligious dialogue and cooperation around the world. This important vision is shared by both our Yad Kiddushi Native American Center and Radio for Peace International. As many listeners to our program know, much of the focus of Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices is promoting reverence for all life and promoting more appreciation and respect for all cultural and spiritual traditions. It was therefore a special privilege for me to interview Mr. Jim Kenney when he visited my home this past January 2001. I want to encourage our listeners to write down the following contact information for the Council so that people can learn more about this special organization. Their computer website is www.cpwr.org. Once again, the Council computer website is www.cpwr.org. Their email is info@cpwr.org. Again, their email is info@cpwr.org. The Council's mailing address is P.O. Box 1630, Chicago, Illinois 60690-1630, USA. Once again, the Council for Parliament of the World's Religions mailing address is P.O. Box 1630, Chicago, Illinois 60690-1630, USA. You can also telephone them at area code 312, telephone 629-2990. We will also repeat this contact information towards the end of our program. Before we listen to my program guest, I want to share some information about the Council for the Parliament of the World's Religions. CPWR is a non-profit organization whose work for planetary peace is well exemplified in their mission statement, which in part I will now read. Quote, as part of its stated mission, CPWR will promote understanding and cooperation among religious and spiritual communities and institutions around the world, cultivate a spirit of harmony, and to celebrate with openness and mutual respect the rich diversity of religious and spiritual traditions, assess and renew the role of religious and spiritual traditions in relation to personal spiritual growth and the challenges facing the global community, promote and sponsor parliaments, conferences, events, programs, projects, publications, and other appropriate activities that further the mission of CPWR. The governance of the Council for Parliament of the World's Religions is a non-profit organization governed by a board of local, national, and international trustees representing diverse religious and spiritual communities, as well as religious and interreligious organizations. It is now my pleasure to welcome my guest, Mr. Jim Kenny, to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Oh, Kanawatakwasin to all of our relations. Now, most listeners to my program know that it is my custom on Native Radio to let our guest introduce him or herself so that way they are more comfortable in expressing whom they are. I will just briefly mention that Mr. Kenny is here as part of a Common Ground series that came to Southwest Florida to speak on a number of subjects that are of interest to me and our listeners, and that is caring for Mother Earth and the well-being of all life, and to try to get a dialogue between different peoples and different cultures of the world, and what in English is called religion. So I'm just going to say, Ashkwe, greetings, and thank you for being on Wolf Mountain Radio today.
Happy to be here. I should say that, as you mentioned, I'm visiting Florida to take part in a number of adult education programs on a variety of topics. Most of them have to do with my great interest, which is not just religion, but dialogue and cooperation between the religions. And I spend most of my time as the international director of something called the Council for a Parliament of the World's Religions, which is one of the larger of the interreligious organizations. There are quite a few. Ours is an organization that works internationally as well as in Chicago and some other metropolitan centers to promote encounter between religious traditions and then dialogue. And of course, that leads, we hope, to greater respect and finally to cooperation. And there's a strong emphasis on cooperative common action to address the whole range of critical issues that face the world. And what we do is, among other things, we punctuate that work, which is ongoing constantly, but we punctuate it by large international gatherings that really are the largest interreligious gatherings in the world and are the first modern such gathering. I say modern because our inspiration was a Parliament of Religions that was held in Chicago in 1893. But in 1993, we did the first modern parliament, and then just recently in 1999 in Cape Town, South Africa. And I'll just add one more thing, which is that your listeners might be interested to know that in the 1993 Parliament and 99 Parliament in Cape Town, each one about 8,000 people from all over the world, in each Parliament there was a very strong Native American participation. First time we had 25 very senior elders and representatives from about 37 nations. In Cape Town this year, because the trip is a longer trip, It was a slightly smaller number, but still very significant. And they were particularly, those elders especially, were particularly interested in meeting their African traditional opposite numbers and traveling to their sacred places and talking to them about the what turned out to be a whole range of common problems.
So before we continue with some more specifics about the Parliament and your Common Ground organization, let our listeners know a little bit about your professional background, your some of your personal interests. How did you become interested in interfaith communication, spiritual doctrines?
My academic background is in comparative religions. I did my doctoral work at Northwestern University in what they call history and literature of religions, but basically it's religions of the world, and you try to do some kind of comparative study. And I taught that for a number of years in a couple of college settings in Illinois, near Chicago, where we live. And in the process, it's hard to study comparative religions and not get interested sooner or later in interreligious dialogue. And so when the opportunity came to get involved with the Parliament, when the idea had just been born, this is in 1988, some of the people that were thinking about organizing a very large interreligious gathering in Chicago to celebrate that earlier one 100 years before got in contact with me. I was excited, and I've been hooked ever since. And now I'm involved, in addition to the Parliament, I'm involved in a number of other international interreligious things. And I think this is a growing movement. It's very significant, and for me it's a real dream to move from the kind of academic study to real hands-on involvement with real people in different traditions.
Thank you, sir. Now, for Native American and indigenous peoples throughout the world, and again, I'm not one that likes generalities, but as one generality, as we're speaking in English, we generally, many listeners know that when we talk about traditional Native peoples, we don't really have a religion per se. We have a spiritual way of life. We have a cultural system that is based on having caring for, respect for Mother Earth and all relations. And where we live as tribal peoples, as Earth peoples, is very fundamental to our cosmologies, where without having any disrespect for other religions, it doesn't seem to matter so much if a temple or a mosque or a church or an ashram is located in this part of a city or this part of a geographic area, where to Native people, basically where we come from, where we live, is very much our sacred ground, our community, our churches, our temples. And I had an opportunity to work as press secretary many years ago for a project you might have heard of called In Defense of Sacred Lands, which was a First Amendment lawsuit that a number of traditional Native American people tried to organize in order to bring to the U.S. Supreme Court and to Congress the concept that to indigenous peoples all over the world, and to those of us who are called American Indians, the desecration of sacred land, Mother Earth, from such so-called development activities as mining, logging, the building of, say, tourist areas on sacred sites like the Badger Two Mountain Medicine Wheel site, are many examples, a site of what's going on for many years, the so-called Navajo Hopi Indian Relocation Commission nonsense, PL 93531, where Peabody Coal can continue to mine more land and steal more sacred water from the Black Mesa area, is a situation where to the Diné and Hopi traditional people, it's a desecration of sacred land. We could go on for hours on many examples. To me, the case of the Mount Graham Observatory with the Vatican and the University of Arizona trying to build a monstrosity called an observatory, an astronomy center, on a sacred site to the Apache Nation is an example. Would you talk about personally, your comment on some of what you see as a theologian, as a spiritual philosopher, and this is my words in English, I apologize if it's not correct, about what I call the desecration of sacred lands, Native American religious freedom, to have sacred sites protected from desecration.
Sure, I am familiar with the defense of sacred lands, and that involved Chief Warren Lyons as well. I think at some point Charlotte Black Elk was also involved in that. I know both of them. In Montana, from the Crow Nation, Burton Pretty on Top is another good friend and someone who's a good friend of that work. I'll say that at this 1999 Parliament in Cape Town, the whole business of defense of sacred lands, which had also been brought up at that earlier Parliament in 1993 in Chicago by the elders and other representatives of the nations. But especially in 1999 in Cape Town, this was a very important part of the focus of the Native American programs at the Parliament. And we have basically people from all over the world attending these programs. At any given time in a Parliament, you got 50 things to choose from. But the Native American programs were, as you might expect, very well attended. And one of the issues that was focused on was the Mount Graham Observatory. A man named Houston Smith, Professor Houston Smith, who's one of the great scholars of religion, he's written sort of the definitive introduction to the world's religions. And he's a very senior scholar and now retired. And in his retirement, he has gotten very much interested in and involved in indigenous people's issues, and especially Native American issues, and especially this defense of sacred lands. So he brought to the Parliament a series of 8 programs involving a conversation between him as sort of the outside facilitator and the Indian expert, and Susan Harjo, Arva Looking Horse, and others spoke to a wide range of issues. But I think the issue that probably came through most clearly to non-Indigenous participants in the Parliament, and that probably generated the most new attention, was the Mount Graham. Not that that's the only important issue, but that was the symbolic issue that made it clearest, gave clear understanding, especially since another religious group, as you point out, the Vatican and the Jesuit observers, have taken the position, have dared to say these lands aren't sacred, which is, especially for one who's interested in dialogue between the religions, this is really an egregious example of, you know, claiming expertise in a tradition that is not your own when it obviously serves your purpose. So I have to say that my own very personal feeling, I'm not speaking for the Parliament, but my personal feeling is that this is a very disturbing situation, and one that I expect now is going to be get more and more attention. But it's symptomatic, as you know, of a larger sort of malaise and what they sometimes call the classical religious traditions, the big organized religions, and especially Christianity, have played fast and loose often, institutionally. And I don't mean by any stretch of the imagination that all Christians feel that way. That's not the case. I think most Christians, if they knew more about what's going on, would be outraged. But some of the institutional structures of the churches have treated indigenous people horribly, and I think one of the reasons is that they have dismissed their spirituality, because it's not organized in a way that is clearly recognizable as an organized religion. They've questioned its legitimacy as a spirituality. I would say, though, that in the last 10 years, especially within the circles of people involved in interreligious dialogue, there is no question whatsoever but that respect for indigenous, for the whole range, the varied range of indigenous spiritualities, is at a very high point today.
This is your host, Ones Pritzker, and I'm very pleased to have as my guest today Mr. Jim Kenny, International Director for the Council for Parliament of the World's Religions. Jim, another question of interest to me and our listeners concerns itself with having a spirit closeness to Mother Earth, which is a core belief in indigenous spirituality, but perhaps until fairly recent times seems to be lacking in the so-called dominant religions. Native ceremonies honor the earth. Our prayers express our gratitude to the Creator and to our natural world relatives, the animal nations, the plant nations, the fish and marine life, the insect and winged beings, the wind, the waters, and our sacred lands. In a word, we call it the great mystery. Yet Western culture seems to keep itself separate and apart from nature. Muslim and Judeo-Christian pronouncements have even called for man to subdue and conquer the natural world, a concept totally arrogant to me and all traditional native beliefs. I am happy to say that there seems to be a growing appreciation for the sacredness of our life, which our tribal peoples have always expressed. In the interfaith movement, I have heard it described as caring for creation, in other words, of having respect for the spirit of our planet. This concept is what I'm asking you to comment on, please. Recent international conferences, such as your CPWR parliaments, the 1986 Assisi Gathering and Declaration, the 1988 Global Forum of Spiritual and Parliamentary Leaders, the 1998 UN University for Peace seeking the true meaning of peace forum, last year's United Nations Summit of World Religious Leaders, and a growing number of other ceremonies and gatherings throughout the world exemplify this very important spiritual understanding of having a connection between what in English is called the environment and religion. Would you please share your thoughts on this?
Let me back up and say that you're absolutely right in saying that the great religions have been silent, not completely, but largely silent, especially on the issues of ecology and sustainability and so on. They have tended to speak out a little more directly when it's a matter of human rights. And as you also are aware, if you think about the whole range of critical issues these days, often, too often, the activists who are working for a better world have been divided into two camps. On the one side are the human rights people, and on the other side are the earth people. And each one sort of is suspicious of the other, that the other is undercutting its efforts. I think that one of the things that I've seen change in the last 5 years is the growth, in terms of the growth of the realization that human rights don't mean anything if there's no earth, and if you don't protect human rights, you can't protect the earth, and they're intertwined. So in the area where I work, in interreligious efforts, and I do that because I think there's such enormous energy there that can be tapped, and if the religions ever decided to work together on anything, it would be an incredible power to be unleashed. What I've seen is a tremendous growth of awareness on both of these fronts, human rights and ecology sustainability. At the 99 Parliament in Cape Town, there were 800 different programs that people could attend. Everything from introduction to this religion or that, to dialogue, to... The majority of the programs had to do with critical issues, and the largest single group was programs having to do with sustainability and ecology and the Mother Earth. And I would say that in religions, one of the things that's really growing is the realization that the only way you're going to get people to change their ways is not by scaring them, because we should be terrified now. There's plenty of evidence that we're in deep ecological environmental trouble, and that doesn't seem to be prompting people to change. But now there's an argument that says it's only by getting people to realize that this is a sacred issue, that what we have been doing is something akin to sacrilege, or as all the indigenous traditions have said, violating the sanctity of the mother and of the sacred earth. It's only when you get people thinking like that that they begin to pause and reflect seriously on changing their ways. So this is a great lesson that's slowly being learned by the classical religions from and cultures from indigenous peoples. And what's also interesting is that now in a number of forums you have indigenous peoples, and I mean that very broadly, African, Latin American, North American, even large international gathering we were at the United Nations in August, where people from the Lap country and Finns and Arctic peoples and subarctic peoples, as well as those we think of when we think of indigenous, and they're all part of a growing informal union that has begun to speak out very articulately on things like global warming, pollution of air and water, and so on. So now, one of the most articulate and thorough sets of statements on such issues is coming for the first time from indigenous peoples. It's a tremendous thing. And let me just add one other thing, which is we've always been able to draw on the indigenous peoples for statements of inspiration and sort of spiritual power. That's still there, but now we're getting the other as well.
Thank you, sir. I know this is probably a silly question. What is it, or why is it, that the so-called Western cultures, the Western people, the Euro-Americans in particular, seem to have lost so much of their culture and traditions? At one point in time, many people were tribal people, going back to what's now called Northern Europe. I had an opportunity when I was in Scandinavia to visit some European people who, it was very interesting. It was, I think the country was Estonia, actually, was south of Scandinavia. And they were very light-skinned Europeans. The ceremony was really almost identical to my own Wabanaki Eastern Woodlands culture. They danced an honor dance to the moose. They had lodges that were made out of skin and stone and tree, just very similar to an old traditional Wabanaki village. And even some of the symbols were almost identical to the Northeastern Woodlands people. And except for the language and for some of the physical appearances, I felt as if I was looking at an old-time Northeast village. Why do you think the so-called modern Western people have been so separated from their spiritual roots, and not just their roots, but even in modern times, they're only now like children beginning to come back and see the importance of ceremony and prayer?
I think your assessment is absolutely right. I think there are a few reasons. I think one is that as Christianity became a universal religion, I don't mean that everyone was a Christian, but it developed into what they call a universal religion, which claims that its truth is relevant to all ways of life and to all peoples. And as it spread from people to people to people, some of the primary principal obstacles that it encountered were what Christians came to call pagan cultures, and of course, pagan just comes from the Roman word that means out in the woods, so these are just native peoples, and yet they put up what Christians felt was a strong resistance. The resistance simply was that they didn't become Christians. And so Christianity sometimes opposed that with force, more often not, but simply overcame it by numbers and so on. So in that process, Christians define themselves less and less in terms of this region or that holy place and so on, and more in terms of some larger universal principles that Christians believed in and claimed. And so the one result was that as Christianity overcame or displaced or absorbed a native people, or in some cases conquered them and drove them away, they would occupy their sacred shrines and build churches. As you go around Europe, and you know, if you dig into the foundations of lots of churches, it's especially clear in Celtic areas, you find evidence that there was a pagan so-called occupation earlier. So I think part of the loss of connection to the rootedness is that their Christianity had to struggle with the people who were rooted and overcome them, and in the process not be rooted, if that makes any sense at all. The other thing is that history of the, in a sense, the history of the last 500 years or even the last 1,000 years of the world, at least one historian has titled a wonderful volume of a history of the world. He calls it The Rise of the West. And he says this is not because he's being chauvinistic, it's just that the West came to dominate. And he suggests that part of the reason is that the density of European population, the fact that Europe was so well watered, there were so many rivers, it was conducive to trade, and so. But whatever the reason, Europe and then America became dominant cultures, and part of that dominance meant intense, I'm putting this in quotes, civilization and urbanization and so on. And you know better than I how those processes, they have advantages, but they cut the ties to the land and they cut the ties to the holy places. I would say, just because I'm reminded that you said earlier that most of the great religions don't have that sense of sacred place. I think there's evidence in all of them that they did, but you're right that most of them have lost it. There are some exceptions, the Chinese Taoist tradition, Shinto, of course, in Japan, is very much rooted to the land. But in most of the other great traditions, Judaism certainly, Islam, Christianity, and Hinduism, you find lots of hints of how important sacred rivers and sacred mountains and knowing your bioregion, how important that was at one point, but again, as they became universal, those things became less real and more symbolic and so on. So you make a good point.
Thank you, sir. Another question of interest and concern, and again, I don't want you to misunderstand my English. I'm someone that believes that it's really important for everyone to learn from one another and to have respect for one another. However, it's also important to respect that, especially when you talk about spirituality and culture and sacred ceremonies, that it takes many years of respect to learn a particular tradition. Even within our own Native American communities, not everyone learns or participates in all ceremonies unless he or she has gone through, in many cases, sometimes many years, even a whole lifetime, following a particular clan medicine way of life. And so my basic question is for you to comment on what I see as what in English is sometimes called the rise of a plastic medicine man, or people going around and really even prostituting and misrepresenting many different sacred traditions, not just Native American community. But as a Native American person, I always make a point to make the announcement that I am by no means a medicine man or a spiritual person, that I'm a modern-day biologist and native journalist. Although growing up in a traditional native community, I do try to talk about our paradigm of peace, and that does involve certain ceremonial ways of thinking. I'm very much concerned about, for example, how people out there are selling sacred pipe ceremonies or sacred sweat lodge ceremonies or vision quests. Not that people aren't allowed to do or participate in these activities, but the Euro-American people, the young people, sometimes look at native culture and spirituality and perhaps other faiths like Buddhism, for example, as well, almost like a fad. Well, this year I'm going to do this, and next year they're going to do that, or they kind of mix different traditions. You go into someone's home and you'll see maybe a Cherokee crystal intermixed with, say, a Buddhist shrine. And I'm not saying it's not important or fine to learn from other cultures, but I think there's a little bit of concern here on the misuse and misrepresentation of sacred knowledges and traditions that really deserve a lot of respect and apprenticeship. Would you talk a little bit about perhaps what I might call the misuse of different ceremonies and beliefs?
Yeah, this is something that I speak about often. You picked a topic very close to my own heart. 20 years ago or so, it's even more than that, when we first started talking about the New Age, I will confess I was very excited about it. I thought it was very promising. It promised to look at ancient and modern and East and West and bring psychology together with spirituality, all with a heavy emphasis on critical problem. Well, as you know, it quickly turned in a different direction, and it turned in the direction of what students of religion call magical thinking, and I mean magical thinking in a sort of critical way. I think if I do this and this and this, then that will happen, and I don't understand the larger dimensions and the kind of discipline that's required for me. I think just having a certain crystal and wearing it around my neck on a certain day of the week will solve my problems. So I have become very impatient with that. In the 1993 Parliament, one of the most powerful themes that was sounded by the Native American presenters was what they called theft of spirituality. Again, they were very careful to say, you're welcome to share our knowledge. We're happy to exchange and to compare, and we're interested in mystical parallels and techniques of meditation from other cultures, and that can only deepen. It's possible to shine light into my tradition from your tradition. But to imagine that you can come in and borrow an amulet or a song or a prayer or imitate a sweat lodge and have done anything other than demean a tradition is a mistake. I'm extremely critical of the notion that just as a student of religion, that you can attend a weekend seminar and then hang out your shingle as a shaman, and there are people doing that all over the place who, and also people that I have run into quite a bit who claim lineages. When you inquire more deeply into the tradition, you know that the lineage they're claiming, or the lineage head, is unknown in the tradition, or else is an outcast from the tradition, or is regarded as prostituting, as suspect in some way. I think this is very important to address. It's not just theft of native or indigenous wisdom. Buddhism is a good example. There are a lot of people who are sort of amateur weekend Buddhists who imagine they're on a Dalai Lama path when they've got just a little. I really believe in sharing from many different traditions, but there is a danger. And the eclectic danger, as I was saying in a presentation the other day, is that you take a little bit from here and a little bit from there and a little bit from there. But the one thing you'll never pick up is discipline. You'll never pick up that harder part of the spirituality. You'll pick up the easy stuff or the glamorous stuff or what seems to you the romantic stuff, and you're not doing yourself a favor either. And it's disrespectful of the tradition. And I hope that it's just because this flirtation with indigenous spirituality is very young, and I hope it will mature, and that those who have exploited it, and there are those on both sides, non-native and native, who have exploited this business, and I hope that they will eventually come to be recognized for what they are.
Please explain a little bit more for our listeners about your parliament and how they might get more information, some of your upcoming conferences, seminars, workshops.
Council for a Parliament of the World's Religions is an international interreligious organization that's also active in metropolitan Chicago. So we have a Metro Chicago initiative, a global or international initiative, and also we're trying to develop a multi-local initiative which will link together several cities. We're going to be beginning with Chicago and Cape Town, since we've hosted major events in both of those cities. We don't do seminars and workshops except at the Parliament event, lots of programs at these events. But I like to say that our ongoing Metropolitan Chicago and international work is punctuated by these very large events that bring together 8,000 to 10,000 people from all over the world, from every religion, every walk of life, but basically people who believe that there's something to be gained from interreligious coming together. Not trying to build one religion, of course, that would be a terrible idea, like one world food, but instead to get to know one another, to understand one another's traditions, and to begin to dialogue, and as I say, develop respect. And ultimately, the most important thing for me is to begin to engage in cooperative, common action to address some of the real problems we all face together. If someone is interested in the work of the Parliament, you can check our website. It's easy to remember, www.cpwr.org. CPWR, Council for a Parliament of the World's Religions. And you'll see some coverage there of the 1999 Parliament, some of our documents that we have produced, including one called Towards a Global Ethic, which is a statement of some basic ethical principles that we believe are shared by all religious and spiritual peoples, and another more recently called A Call to Our Guiding Institutions, which addresses the most powerful institutions in the world, religion, government, business, education, media, and so on, and challenges each in very specific ways, or in ways specific to each, to rethink its role for a new century. So that will give someone a very clear idea of what are the issues that we're struggling for. In a nutshell, they're peace, justice, and sustainability. I'm sure we're on the same wavelength there. The next parliament will be in the year 2005, which, as I say, doesn't mean we're not doing lots of stuff in between, but it takes a world of time to pull one of these together. And I'm very happy to say that at this point we have about 10 cities internationally that are very anxious to host it, which is a kind of ideal situation from our point of view. We'll be working on that process this year and making some kind of decision this year about where the next one will be. But in the meantime, I think stopping by the website would be very interesting. Now, I also have this other organization, a much smaller scale venture called Common Ground, which brings me here to Naples. Normally, Common Ground is an adult education program in Chicago that addresses, we say, the world's great religious, spiritual, philosophical, and cultural traditions, and their implications for everything else. So what we try to do is to bring together good teachers. Most of them are academics who like to sort of shake off that academic stricture and speak to an audience of interested adults about a topic that's close to their heart or their work. And so we bring together really excellent teachers and important topics.
Thank you. I'm very thankful and honored that you've come into my home and our studio today. I haven't had the opportunity yet to look at your website, but just our interview this afternoon, much of what you have in your heart really is similar to our own with Radio for Peace International. Before you go, I'm going to make sure that I give you some information on RFPI, because we as an organization have sponsored two world forums that have brought together indigenous elders from different parts of the world. I don't like the word medicine man. I use the word wisdom keeper and traditional elders. One of them was called Peace on Planet, Mother Earth, Native Wisdom and Native Rights, that was held in the Klamath country, now called Eugene, Oregon, in 92. And the second one we hosted was in 1998, called Belonging to Mother Earth, Indigenous Wisdom and Healing, in the Chesapeake territory, now called Virginia Beach, USA. I had the honor for RFPI, through Dr. Richard Schneider, the president and founder of RFPI, to interview more than 60 of the traditional elders from all over the world, and there were indigenous peoples from what's now called Africa, Siberia, Australia, Aotearoa, Maoris, of course, North Central South America, and all those programs are available on through a series called Belonging to Mother Earth, Indigenous Wisdom. I'm going to ask you, as I ask all my guests, to please comment on anything else that you might wish to as a final thought.
I just wanted to say that when I came in today, I didn't realize this was part of Radio for Peace International, but I am aware of that. I know about the University for Peace in Costa Rica, and Dr. Robert Miller is a good friend to the work that, that we're both involved in. So I just want to commend you. I think this is a great thing, and I'm particularly interested in those interviews you did, because I got an invitation to the conference in Virginia Beach and was not able to go. So I'd love to find out more about that. So thank you very much. I've really enjoyed it.
Thank you, sir.
Imagine there is a radio station working for a better world, social justice and human rights, independent broadcasting 24 hours a day. Radio for Peace International, Costa Rica. We are giving voice to the voiceless.
Hello again, everyone. I hope you enjoyed listening to my guest today, Mr. Jim Kenny, International Director, Council for Parliament of the World's Religions. As we have only about 12 minutes left, I want to again share the Council's contact information. Their computer website is www.cpwr.org. Their email is info@cpwr.org. The Council's mail address is Council for a Parliament of the World's Religions, P.O. Box 1630, Chicago, Illinois 60690-1630, USA. You can also telephone them at area code 312-629-2990. And when you look at the website, one of the important documents listed is a paper entitled Call to Our Guiding Institutions. And I want to paraphrase a little bit from this document. And what I'm going to share with you is the section entitled Towards a Global Ethic. While the world's religious and spiritual traditions differ profoundly with respect to various beliefs and practices, they nevertheless hold in common certain ethical principles. One formulation of this ethical common ground is found in the document Toward the Global Ethic, an initial declaration issued on the occasion of the 1993 Parliament of the World's Religions. The document identifies four universal directives that offer a basis for a global ethic. Do not kill, do not steal, do not lie, do not commit sexual immorality. These directives are further described and emphasized in the following affirmations. Have respect for life, deal honestly and fairly, speak and act truthfully, respect and love one another. Towards a Global Ethic then proposes that these affirmations lead to four vital commitments. Commitment to a culture of nonviolence and respect for life, commitment to a culture of solidarity and a just economic order, commitment to a culture of tolerance and a life of truthfulness. Commitment to a culture of equal rights and partnership between men and women. Addressing the critical issues. Reflecting on the shared principles expressed in the global ethic, we see the critical issues of our time in stark relief. Disintegrating community, unrelenting demand on the Earth's limited resources, aggravated injustice, growing divisions between rich and poor, spiritual indirection. At the same time, if we address these agonies from the perspective of shared moral commitments, we can find hope. That endeavor can be described in the following ways: building community in diversity, commitment to sustainability, striving for justice, solidarity in service, and seeking spiritual grounding. And finally, under creative engagement, when reflecting on the future of the human community, one must consider the world's most powerful institutions, institutions whose policies, for better and for worse, influence every aspect of life on the planet. Clearly, the critical issues facing the world today present an acute ethical challenge to these institutions. What is urgently needed is a new opening to creative engagement among the guiding institutions, an active, attentive, and inventive collaboration rooted in shared moral principles and expressed in mutually sustained programs on behalf of the peoples of the 21st century. And I finished the quote. Very important words from the Council for a Parliament of the World's Religions, and I'm very grateful to have Mr. Jim Kenny, International Director from the Council, here in the studio this afternoon. I hope you have a very fine trip back to Chicago, and I hope you will keep our listeners appraised of the upcoming 2005 Council Conference. I share so much in common. It's been a very great pleasure to have you here. We're going to conclude today's program with a closing comment and closing prayer from Gourd Woman, a Dakota Hidatsa elder, and Eagle Heart, an Anishinaabe elder. And following that, the very beautiful song entitled Yehenoha, and that song translates into wishes of happiness and prosperity from Sacred Spirit CD. Until the next Honoring Mother Earth and Indigenous Voices program, this is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker, wishing you well. Ho, Kanawatakwasin to all of our relations.
We always give thanks to the earth itself and always try to walk with respect, because if we don't realize that all of the earth has power and energy, then we might not be able to receive whatever that particular place has for us. And all of that, you know, is part of what people commonly refer to as the circle, and we're all a part of it.
Great Spirit of God, we want to thank you again for this wonderful day, the many things you bless us with, and also your teachings in this world. You gave your prophets to teach, all your prophets to teach about these four things: love, respect, and faith, and unity. These are your teachings. You gave an order to be taught all over the world. And we thank you for those teachings, where we can observe them and believe in them and preach them. Shemandu, Knadasko Migo, Nanongomanin Pemina Ujan Knagego. Where the Shaki Kunamua Donanduk, Nanaduk, Kunamuaganak, where Chikunamage Wat, where Shawendi win, Shawendi win. The Magan the Moon. She come in awa. You wait. They bought Tamuin. We got a winter no Kimitan. Winter no Kimitan. Me wait, son, me wait no Gominawa. And I come going. Me was, and I go. How? Thank you.
Listening to Yat Kedetshi Native Center's Honoring Mother Earth and Indigenous Voices. Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices focuses on protecting Mother Earth and defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples. We are broadcasting on Radio for Peace International. Radio for Peace is the voice of peace, promoter of the environment, champion of human rights, denouncer of hate and injustice, advocate of the oppressed, defender of truth. Radio for Peace International is global community radio.